This is Rakovic After Hours.
Good welcomes and hello or something to Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 143. It's a music and technology podcast. Welcome, welcome, you are very welcome. Did I mention that you're welcome? My name's Ben, Peter's here. And first, we must find out what Pete's been doing this last week. Take it away.
Right, well, I've actioned something. I have put into motion the acquisition of the SSL Bus Plus.
The Bus Plus.
Yes.
Yes, of course. Cool. It begins. Tell us about it, because I've totally forgotten what it is.
Well, the Bus Plus was a reasonably recent release from SSL, and it is a master bus compressor, and there's some other features in there, basically. So it's two compressors in a 19-inch rack, and when you've got it in stereo mode, I believe only one side kind of functions, because it's kind of unified, or you can use it as two separate compressors. I think there's a little bit of EQ available as well, nothing massive, but generally all round, this is for my push to eliminate plugins.
Yeah, I remember, now that it's coming back to me for some reason, you had a hankering once for the SSL Fusion.
Yes, well, the Bus Plus ticks more boxes for me, I believe. I mean, the Fusion was interesting and it did a lot. I mean, it was a multi-tool. You know, it had EQ, a bit of compression and some other bits and pieces. But I think it was too generic for my taste. And with the Bus Plus, which is pretty much exclusively a compressor, it's going to sit perfectly on my master bus. So I'm going to run a feed out of the audio interface, or two feeds, left and right, and then run them back in again. It's just going to sit permanently on the...
Looks a bit more of the business, this one.
And then possibly at a later stage, I might buy two SSL channel strips.
Very fancy.
Maybe something that I run. But I don't do much in the way of mic recording, apart from podcasts, obviously, and things like that. But I'm not sitting there miking drum kits up and miking vocalists and, you know, doing the day-to-day studio type stuff. Most of my equipment is all line level going straight into the audio interface, so there's no massive requirement for EQing initially on the record phase. But again, it's something that I aspire towards. I mean, I can stick with using soft EQs for now, but in the long term, I just want to eradicate all plugins, just have the door. I'm not going to go back to tape or anything like that, recording wise.
not quite the whole hog,
but it's just that with the cost of plugins, with the tendency for a lot of the vendors to go to these subscription models, and just with the varying of operating system upgrades and then door upgrades and all this sort of thing, I just find myself, you know, one minute everything's working fine and then there'll be an upgrade somewhere and suddenly half your plugins don't work.
The quarter-inch jack isn't going anywhere fast.
Yes.
Nor is the XLR.
And I also like the idea of having a decent hardware compressor rather than endless emulations. So, yeah, nothing that exciting to get excited about, but it's the sort of thing that lights my fuse, or gets me going. Ooh.
It certainly looks the business.
Quality electronics.
Mm-hmm. So is that just the initial inquiry or a deposit down already?
Well, I've pushed the button on the process, and then I would imagine that I'll be doing the deposit thing very shortly. I'm just waiting for a response from a particular supplier.
Good stuff. Any more tales from the week?
I think that's been it for me, really. I've been back in the store because I haven't been there for a few weeks, and yeah, it's working in a shop, basically.
Thrilling stuff. I have an update on last week's squash-related injury. I had my second round game, and it didn't go very well at all. Hampered by a right leg that didn't quite work, and I'm still recovering. And now the other hip's doing some strange things. So I'm falling apart as well, Pete. It's not just you. I'm slowly losing function in different ways.
Yeah, well, I've got 35, nearly 40 years on you. But no, squash is a pretty demanding sport, though, isn't it?
Indeed, yes. And on that front, I was also promoted to teams. Our club has 5 squash teams. I was playing for the fourths, and the nominations just came out for this season, and I'm now in the seconds, which is terrifying. But, you know, if you don't challenge yourself, you don't get any better.
More opportunities to rip, tear, and generally break yourself.
Yes, indeed. I will have to focus, actually, on my stretching and functional strength and support type stuff. Boring, but what is exciting for our musical technological listeners is a certain device that I have been playing with recently. By recently, I mean just today, before I came here. A device of sound devices, MixPre 10. Ooh, very cool. This is a purchase of Ian's for the company, and we'll be doing some video sound-related stuff with it. But it's quite cool. It's actually replacing, in part, an SQN mixer, which I think probably we have some leaky power capacitors, according to the service department's guesses, but we'll see once it actually arrives with them on the Isle of Man. Have you heard of SQN before?
Not personally, no.
So yeah, from the Isle of Man, it seems, and they have a bit of a legendary reputation in the sound for video type world as being completely indestructible and excellent sounding. Obviously, if you leave them alone and don't use them for a long time, then maybe they don't survive so long. But yes, SQN.
So is it just a field mixer or is it a recorder as well?
These ones are just field mixers, yes indeed, with slightly specialised features for the video world, but nothing outlandish, and they're bulletproof.
What are you trying to aggregate through such a mixer?
So for the project that we'll be working on, it's going to definitely have two wireless lav mics plugged into it all the time, maybe a wireless handheld, and also maybe a shotgun mic on a big old boom. We shall see. So it'll be creating a stereo mix of whatever microphones might be used, feeding it into the camera for recording and parceling up into the video file at the end. I mean, in this case, we're actually live streaming, but same kind of deal. So the sound devices MixPre 10 will just be a mixer.
I see. So it would be the sort of thing that would be a conference or presentation where you've got multiple hosts and maybe guests as well. So
yeah, that kind of thing. But the sound devices implication is quite exciting, given that they are one of those companies that gets that label industry standard a lot. Not these ones. The MixPre is their more recent budget line, and by budget that doesn't suggest that they're in any way inferior, really. It's just some really advanced feature sets that lots of people wouldn't need, like Dante recording and 32 tracks and other such things.
Sounds expensive.
It was $1,500.
For how many channels?
8 plus 2 auxiliary on a 3.5mm.
Okay, and what sort of physical format does it?
Really tiny. So, listeners, just imagine, but you can also Google the dimensions, but it's about this kind of size and about that thick.
Size of a paperback book.
Yeah, that's it. Battery powered and has some obscenely clean preamps. And it can record 32-bit floating point audio, which means it has such an unreasonable dynamic range that you don't need to set the gain because you can't digitally distort it, which is wild. I do want to try that out soon. But yes, I'm very excited. It's actually kind of a bucket list item for me, being the sound guy on a video shoot.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of that make. I would imagine they're hand-built as well.
I don't know. But yeah, they've certainly, their niche has only been field recording and field sound for video and motion pictures and such.
Is it one of these companies that's been around forever?
Let's find out. I don't actually know a huge amount about them. The classic ones that have been industry standard are the 633, the new 833, and I think the Scorpio. Those are their top-of-the-line ones. The Scorpio is over £5,000. So it's an American company from 1998.
Okay, 1998, that's when they started.
Yes, indeed, ex-Shaw employees.
Okay, so it was a breakout from Shaw.
Yeah, so let me give you some specs of their flagship big bad machine. I'll show you what it looks like as well.
Okay, it's a sort of, it's not rack mount, but it's
that kind of shape, but smaller and not the standard.
Sort of one U, sort of thing I can see in a padded bag with a strap.
Exactly, with the little water-resistant clear cover thing over it.
Yes, so you can get your hand, but you can see what you're doing under the cover.
Yeah, actually, I'll give you the specs of the MixPre 10, because that's the one I'm using. So 12 tracks, 32-bit float, 8 preamps. You can record from 44.1 to 192 kilohertz in weird intervals as well, not just, you know, 44.1, 48, and so on, doubling. There's some something point such and such, which I imagine are strange, lesser-known video-related sample rates. It has really accurate timecode generation and interfacing, according to the people that know things about timecode. That's not me. You can attach control surfaces for mixing. I won't be able to do that. I'm just going to have to do it on the pots. A really good output stage for driving headphones. It also has the facility to run plugins, which allow you to up, well, probably not up, but down mix from ambisonic formats for monitoring on headphones. There's also some quite advanced denoising stuff that you can run on it in real time. It can be an audio interface if you want.
So is it completely digital?
Other than whatever circuitry you need to get preamplifiers and output stages to work, yes.
Okay. And what medium would you eventually record on?
So it's just SD cards. You can back up onto a little USB thumb drive as well if you want.
So it is a recorder as well. Mm-hmm. It's not just a mixer.
Yeah, this one is much more recorder than the one it's replacing, although we will get that fixed and continue to use it. So the conversion, you've got 142 decibels of dynamic range minus 130 decibel volts, I think is the unit for that in terms of its noise floor. Let's get some context for that dynamic range, shall we? So when we're talking decibels, 10 is roughly a doubling in loudness. So your standard Focusrite Scarlett interface has roughly 110 decibels of dynamic range, and the MixPre 10 has 142, which is rather mad.
So massive headroom.
Unreasonable headroom, which is super cool. It's got standard recording features like you might find on a Zoom, like filters, limiters, that kind of stuff as well. Anyway, I'm very excited to play around with it, and I should have some opportunity to try out the 32-bit recording this week as well. I'll report back if I notice anything mind-blowing. I'm sure I shall. Annoyingly, you do have to use slightly different programs to work with 32-bit float files. Logic doesn't do it, so I might have to subject myself to Adobe Audition.
Cubase will do it.
Actually, to be fair, I'd take Cubase over Audition any day. Yeah, I think I'll have to see if Ableton can, otherwise I'll have to install something else. So yes, those are tales from my week. It's news time. And this isn't really news because I have nothing to tell you. But on the Instagram page of IntelliGel, they have a lovely forest clearing. Not really a clearing. A foresty picture. IntelliGel Cascadia. Coming soon.
Did they say what it is?
Nope. So let's visit the comments, shall we, and see what speculation is.
I see what speculation is being speculated.
Yes. Voltage Flow Residency says, just sell me this photo as a blank panel. Oh yeah, I remember this from looking on the Mod Wiggler thread. A lot of people are voting successor to the Rainmaker.
Okay, so a more complex delay.
Yeah, I think most people were going for something spacey in their guesses.
I was actually thinking of getting a Rainmaker, but now I'm going to have to hold off. Yes.
Just in case. So that's all we've got. We'll have to keep an eye. Now, here we are. The biggest news that has ever been newsed on Rack Addicts. Ping! The biggest news ever to be newsed by our mouths onto a recording device. The Expressive E Osmose is shipping in December.
Ba-da. So that will bring it up to 3 years since we first talked about it on the podcast.
Will. Incredible.
Well, I expect the pandemic hasn't helped.
Definitely not. So I believe this will be people signed up for the mailing list or have a pre-order in or something, because it's on a few forum threads. But yeah, people have been notified that the first batch is shipping in December.
Aren't these all early adopters?
Oh, of course, it was kickstarted first. So yes, you're right. Most likely the first backers will be the first to be notified.
So it'd be quite a time before we see some retail examples, I would imagine.
A good while, certainly. And there is a new YouTube video with sound design.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch it now because I want to see. I think it's a guy we had at the shop for some Touche videos a while back. It's going to be pretty cool. Yeah. You should definitely watch that one later. Show me to WhatsApp this to you.
Yeah, you can do. Yeah, that'd be great. But I'm not going to get excited because it's not going to be till middle of next year that we actually see hello.
That was me.
Fair enough.
True indeed.
Well, the one previous is from someone called Nina that just suddenly WhatsApped me and just says hello, which I'm going to
spam.
Yeah, I'm going to block straight away.
I really enjoy those spam texts and things that you get, which is just from a mobile number. And it says, your Yodel parcel has £5 of taxes to be collected or whatever. And firstly, you're running a scam. You're not trying very hard. And why would you only try and get people for £5? I don't know. They do make me laugh, though.
So blocked. and then deleted as well. And they've also got a picture of a very attractive lady.
Oh, yeah, obviously they always do that. So, you know how I said the Osmos was the most exciting news to ever be newsed?
Well, I've reported and blocked.
Classic. There is better news.
Go on.
Potentially. I think, I can't remember where I saw it, the sort of thumbnail for this article was a picture of an American street sign to hell with icicles on it. Because Electron, they've done it.
Go on.
They've done the thing.
What have they done?
You know the thing that people wanted?
The thing that I want.
The song mode.
Yeah.
They've done it.
Really?
Yeah. Song mode on the little boxes.
Oh, what? Not on the Digitac?
Yeah, the Digitac's a little box.
Oh, I thought you were talking about cycles and samples.
No, who cares about those? No. The song mode is there.
Excellent. I'm all unnecessary now.
Yeah, they call it the Digi Trinity, so yeah. That'll be Digitact, Tone, and Syntact, I believe.
Is that available immediately, or do we have to wait for that
update? I think it's ready to go. People have been using it. So, let me tell you what you've got, apart from it being a song mode. Well, actually, I'll just read it from the Electron thingy. Song mode lets you create, edit, and play compositions made up of dozens of your patterns. This makes it a hugely useful feature for all kinds of scenarios and for all kinds of artists. Want to have a deeply customizable backing track, leaving your hands free for other sweet gear? That's now possible, and so much more! Extend beyond the limits of the 64-step sequencer, giving you the possibility of longer phrases. Create entire set lists in a single song, and use it as a springboard for your wicked performance, going off piste whenever it feels right. Sequence external devices and have them dancing to song mode's tune, turning the diggies into fully fledged MIDI beasts. Oh yeah.
Now, why couldn't it have done that in the first place?
No idea. Maybe they just wanted to make sure they got the most out of their big boxes for a while.
Two years. I've struggled with that machine. And I think I possibly will now sell the 1010 Music Black Box.
I was going to say, that's why you kept trying other things, wasn't it? Because there was no song mode.
Yeah.
It was annoying.
Because that was the only thing that, because it's a great machine. The physicality of it, the nice tactile, clicky buttons, everything about it. It's a wonderful box.
They are very tactile. So, I think it looks kind of like a tracker, which is kind of cool, the song mode. But yeah, I haven't looked into it much more than that. I just saw it and went, yes, this is wonderful news.
Should actually help with sales, to be honest, because you talk to people about it and then it's, oh dear, it hasn't got a song mode.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that would sway people to something like, what's that Roland thing?
The AS thing?
Well, no, that's the drum machine, the TR-8S.
Yeah.
But it's that shape, but it's a groove box.
Okay, yeah, the MC-707 and the 101.
Yeah, the little baby one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Electron.
I'm pretty pleased about that, actually. Mm. Thank you for bringing that news to me.
Hooray! What a day for excellent news. And now, this isn't excellent news, but it's funny. So, Teenage Engineering have done something, yeah. So, they have taken an existing product and rebranded it.
Mm-hmm.
How fascinating. So, what they've done is taken the Gacken Toy Record Maker kit, made it look slightly more Teenage Engineering, and they're reselling it. But they're not making... Well, they're probably making money, but they haven't priced it ludicrously high like they seem to do with a lot of their stuff. So it's called the PO80 Record Factory.
Mm.
Lets you cut your own super low quality vinyl.
What do you cut them with? Acetate or, I mean, what medium are you using for the...
We'll find out. But what I did enjoy about their own webpage is, well, first thing I thought, okay, it's about 150 quid or something. And, I mean, cutting vinyl's a complicated and precise situation, so it can't sound good. And in all of the copy on the webpage, they're really trying to, like, play up the terrible, terrible sound of this thing, which is amazing. So let me find some and read it for you. They're 5-inch. I don't know what they're made from. I might be able to find that out later. Here we go. So, ultra lo-fi dreams. Experience the warmth of lo-fi audio. Play back your unique cuts and give your favorite 7-inch records new life with ultra analog sound quality. The built-in speakers allow you to listen directly from your PO80 or connect an external speaker through the 3.5mm audio plug.
I'm still fascinated in what the actual medium of the discs are going to be.
I'll see if there's any detail in the replacement thingies. Oh no, there's a section on the webpage called Master It. To get the optimum sound quality for your recordings, use our vinyl mastering tool to pre-process your audio before cutting it.
So that's just software?
I believe so. It's just like the RXAA curve. Is it RXAA? I always get it wrong. RIAA. Is it? Yes, RIAA curve. So it'll just whack a bunch of high-end in there, take off all of the low frequencies before... Actually, which way around is it? No, it's the other way around. Taking out all the high end and smashing a bunch more low end into it so that it sounds right when you listen back.
Mm-hmm.
So there's pocket operator integration, so you can make quick little grooves, because of course you want to do that. So I think they say in collaboration with Yuri Suzuki, who I think made the original. I doubt they've done much or really innovated on the design at all. So £20 gets you a 10-pack of records, 4 minutes a side at 33 RPM, 3 minutes at 45. So it's good that you got both speeds so you can play with the pitch. That's kind of cool. Yeah, it just says vinyl.
Vinyls are moulded.
Yeah, when they're sort of mass-produced, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, and a record master isn't the same material. Isn't it cut onto metal?
Well, the template is cut into metal, but as I say, if you wanted a quick one, they're normally on acetate, which...
Right. What is acetate? I know when it's like the flexible, clear, filmy stuff.
I'm not really sure, but it's an old type of plastic of sorts, but they don't wear very well. They only up to very limited plays.
Yeah, it just degrades horribly.
A lot of DJs used to have acetates of special, very limited edition stuff. Possibly something they've cut themselves.
Okay, I changed my mind. There are some audio samples to play. There's just demo 1, 2, and 3. Let's see what we've got, shall we?
Definitely lo-fi.
That's really horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really awful. I mean, I don't know why anyone would want anything like that or anything to do with something like that. I thought the whole gist of... Other than the sort of scratch DJs or certain DJs that, or people who collect vinyl, I thought the sort of audiophile side of it was that you would get a nice analog warmer performance, say a nice orchestral performance, and you have it on your really overpriced hi-fi.
Yeah. So by ultra analog sound quality, they mean band limited and really distorted in an unpleasant way. Wonderful. You too can contribute to the... plastic pollution of our planet. Go buy the Teenage Engineering PO80. Wonderful.
I wonder if we'll stock them.
Yeah, who knows?
Doesn't bear thinking about, does it?
Okay, this is the slightly philosophical one. I just need to scroll up to the beginning of this thread. So, I was on the Lines forum, which tends to be my default doom-scrolling option rather than YouTube these days. Actually, I've done really well in kicking YouTube recently because I just deleted my channel and there we go. It's done.
It's gone.
Yeah. But yeah, I've just replaced it with Netflix and Lines and bikepacking.com. Anyway, user ZBS, or ZBS, all lowercase. ZBS. Anyway, he says, they say, I've no idea who this is, what if we spoke about electronic music making without using the names of equipment or manufacturers? Can the forum support this kind of conversation? Can any forum? If not, what does that say about the landscape of internet music communities? A looper versus an Octatrack, an envelope versus Maths Channel 1, a virtual modular instead of VCV. And there were some very interesting replies. I'm just going to pick some bits to feed your brain and then we'll see what you think. Lines user Jabuba says, apart from removing the hook for gear lust, FOMO, Jones's keeping up with, and general material soul voids, it makes the ideas more accessible. More people will be able to try out techniques or configurations with what they already own and contribute meaningfully to these discussions and hopefully spend more time making music than padding the baskets of online commerce. Here's an example of talking in a gear-agnostic fashion, a patch breakdown, if you will. The Stochastic lead voice is a bank of oscillators tuned at octaves and fifths. They're each individually strummed, plucked, or struck by their individual clock divider. Their clock dividers are getting reset once in a while. All oscillators are getting sent the same pitch sequence. The arpeggiation effect is a product of the bank being struck at different rates. Then it's sent through a noise-modulated bandpass. The noisy percussion is some synth shaker samples being played back. It's filtered noise. The pitch and the timbre slash filter cutoff and envelopes are being modulated throughout by hand and with parameter locks. So, Pete, what do you think, as somebody who may well have suffered with GAS, of the gear acquisition syndrome kind, I don't know, do you even spend a lot of your time on forums? But definitely in your discussions with customers and other synth heads, do you think talking about, ooh, I did this with this piece of gear, contributes to the gas?
In the context of me being in the store, obviously yes, because we're trying to sell said pieces of equipment.
You should be doing the gas thing.
But we've always agreed, and I even state the same feelings to a customer, or that I make the same statements to customers, and that is that having lots of equipment won't make you a better musician or make your productions particularly any better. I mean, obviously, there's a threshold of minimal amount of equipment you need. But beyond that, there isn't a great need. And the more you get, and it certainly in my case, makes you less productive because you've got all this stuff. It just becomes bewildering.
Yeah.
Having said that, certain pieces of equipment do have characteristics. And now you've just listed a lot of, or read out a lot of functionality without referring to any particular make or model of equipment. And it just sounded even more like gobbledygook than it would do normally. So the trouble is, some of the gear lust kind of goes hand in hand with the whole euphoric nature of the hobby or the interest, depending on how you see it. I certainly note that professional musicians don't tend to get too fixated on equipment. They're more fixated on the product, the end product.
Yeah, it's quite interesting watching some musicians be interviewed in various circles, especially in the metal community, which is where I've been seeing most of these artist interview type things. There'll be so many questions about the gear, but if you talk to a bluesier or a jazzier guitar player, they'll have less comments about their equipment because that's really not what they're focusing on. I suppose the less you focus on the gear, potentially the more productive you could be. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, the gear, especially if there's too much of it, can become an obstacle rather than an aid to what you're trying to achieve. That does depend on what you're trying to achieve, because there are many people who just relish purchasing and owning the equipment. And that is a big part of their enjoyment, is the equipment itself. They're not necessarily that focused on producing a lot of music in itself.
Of course. I think it really resonated with me, this thread. Someone who's trying to get back into a little bit of electronic-y, modular-y sound exploration. I've definitely suffered with the gas in the past. And following this thread, hopefully I come across some ideas. Ooh, yeah, I could try that. And just not be sucked down into, ooh, that module does this. I want to be able to do that. We'll see how it transforms the thought process, if at all.
Travis, we spend our life contemplating these pieces of equipment and going, ooh, it does that.
Pretty much.
I need to have it because it does A, B, or C.
Indeed. Can the two coexist? We shall find out. But listeners, I hope that got your brain working in a slightly different way. Go and find it online. The thread is called Namelessness, and I'm a fan. Need to finish reading it. About halfway through. There we are. We have newsed. You know what that means, listeners. It is time for the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. Pete, fire away.
Right, this week it's a YouTube channel by one of these gentlemen that has done a lot of work on cable TV. So Discovery, Travel Channel, etc., etc. So the gentleman in question is called Henry Cole, and his YouTube channel is called Henry Cole TV. And he basically says, welcome to the official YouTube channel of presenter Henry Cole, best known for sharing his lifelong passion for motorcycles and the tinkering and restoration of vintage machinery with viewers around the world. So currently he's the presenter of World's Greatest Motorcycle Rides for the Travel Channel, The Motorbike Show, which is on Discovery, and Shed and Buried, which is also on the Travel Channel. The Motorbike Show Special with Steve McQueen's motorcycle, and then Find It, Fix It, Flog It. Anyway, he's been on a few programs, but this is his YouTube effort, and it's very much of the same ilk. So he goes to various meets or goes to talk to people who are doing interesting things in their garage, and all with motorcycles. So if you're into that kind of the whole world of unusual, historic, maybe not so historic, some of them, but that type of thing, this is a bit of you. So that's my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel simply entitled Henry Cole TV.
Lovely stuff. I'm going to pass one on this week because I haven't mediated any miscellany. I was at Ian's earlier today, and he'd actually purchased a couple of, you know, the Genelec 8010s.
Yes.
I think, well, might have been a while ago. It was the first I'd seen them, and he's enjoying them. But just to show how they were sounding in his new garden studio, he played a favourite track of his, which I hadn't come across before. It's Massive Attack. It is Teardrop. It's a good one. That's all I'm going to say. Massive Attack. Teardrop. Go listen to it. It was super cool. I did recognise the vocal part, because still haven't figured out why. For some reason, we were studying it when I did my degree, that particular vocal part isolated. So it was a small section of it was looped over and over again and slowly drove me mad. But it was nice to actually hear it in its context. Yes. Massive Attack. Teardrop. Go listen to it. I'm going to listen to the Aurora cover as well, because I like her stuff. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you tune in once more. Farewell.